Good morning. Court radio is now in session. Call 215-227-2727. When you've got legal questions, we've got the answers. This is Court Radio. And now here's your host, Dean Weitzman.
Good morning and welcome back. I'm Dean Weitzman, your host of Court Radio every Saturday morning right here on 100.3 WRNB.
And Classics 107.9.
There you go. We've gotten our station identifications out of the way. We're ready to start the show. The firm is here, not completely, as we have one sick firm member.
Yeah, get well soon.
Manny Manuel.
Yeah, man.
He is down and out.
For the moment.
Yeah. We wish him a speedy recovery. You know what else today is? Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, today is my youngest's birthday.
Ooh. Aww.
Sophia.
I know she's doing it big today. What is she doing?
We started last night. It's like a Greek event. You know, I'm not sure that was right. You know, one of those all weekend long things. We went to see the new Trolls movie.
That looks so good.
You know, it's the first time I've been to a theater since pre-COVID, and, you know, didn't go much before that either. It was a lot of fun to go to a movie theater to see a movie.
Yeah.
I mean, and they actually have assigned seats now.
Yes. Oh, we've been doing that for way before.
Yeah,
it's been a long time since you've been to the movie.
Yeah, I
went and saw the Marvels movies.
Yeah, I saw the poster board for that up there.
Yeah, it's great to go back to the movies.
Yeah,
it's real good.
The popcorn wasn't that good. They need a little improvement on the popcorn.
More salt.
Yeah, more salt, more butter, more something.
But you can do that yourself. Didn't you see the butter station?
I missed it. I didn't realize they have butter stations now.
Sir, I'm concerned. I feel like it's been 10 years since you went to the movie theater.
Probably.
Because the assigned seating started when people used to fight for seats for the Marvel movies. And people used to stand in line, because I used to be in those lines with my honey. We used to wait for like an hour in line, or you had to sit an hour in a theater. And then people got grumpy and people started fighting over seats. And then they started doing assigned seats. And life was great.
Because the first Avengers movie was noodles.
Yes.
For noodles.
Yeah. Well, in any event, regretfully, I have not been to the movies in a while, but we're going to try to make that more of a happening event. Yeah. And so we took the girls to the Trolls movie, came back, we had a pizza party, cake, and they were up. At midnight, I went to bed, you know, knowing that I had to be here today, and they were still, you know, squealing downstairs. They had built a fort, and they were manning their fort.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah. And then today, you know, there'll be some more events today at the Weitzman household. But happy birthday, Sophia.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Number 10.
Ooh, double digits.
Yeah.
Well, since it's been a while for you, I just want you to know that now at the movie theater, you can have reclining seats and they can serve you food at your seat.
Wow.
Oh, yeah,
I just want to speed that up for you. I didn't want you to find out like 10 years from now.
You know, the only problem with that is once you recline the seats and everything like that, I went to see.
You're out. You're sleeping.
I woke up at the end of the movie and said, dang. You know what I mean? I got to go pay to see this
$11
movie again.
For you to take a good nap.
Gone.
215-227-2727, the number for all things legal. If you've got a legal issue or question, today's the day to give us a call right here at Court Radio at 215-227-2727, and we will endeavor to answer your said question. We've got a lot of things going on. What do you want to tackle first?
Let's tackle the live show that we have coming up first.
Live show. Folks, we on December the 9th, okay, a few short weeks from now, we'll be having a live Court Radio extravaganza right here at the studio, 555 City Ave. And you and your loved ones can be a part of that show. And we're also having food and party favors and all kinds of fun stuff for our Court Radio fans. So feel free to give us a call today and stake your claim on tickets for the upcoming live show on December 9th. All right? There you go. There was a lawsuit filed against Puff Diddy.
Ooh.
It was.
Yeah. Ooh, there was.
That was the fastest, well, almost the fastest lawsuit in the history of lawsuits.
It was about 24 hours. And I've never seen a lawsuit get settled at midnight on a Friday.
Well, I would have settled it before. You know, if I were representing Puff, that thing would never have, you know, seen the light of day. I don't know how much he got out from under it, whether it was worth exposure at that level. That's the question he'll probably always be asking himself. She wanted, what was it, $30 million?
That's supposedly what the number was originally, was $30
million. Right. So let's say he got the deal done for $15
million. No. The word is he got the deal done for $100 million. Because yeah. So this was a very rare case where the internet was the detectives. The internet went and dug up every interview, every social media post, whether from Diddy, from her, or from former artists on the label, and everything looked bad. Everything looked damaging, and everything looked like it was going to be admissible in court.
Well, then that was a very bad deal, right? It cost them three times as much. That's why I said I would have made this thing go away a long time ago. There are times when it's time to settle your claim. And, but you know what she got out of it? She a lot more money. But also, she got the fact that it was out there. I mean, that's probably the most important thing. If I can put my shoes into her, my feet into her shoes, I would say she accomplished two things. One, she made it public, every sordid detail of their relationship. And it's, you know, available because the complaint is a public document. So it's on the court docket. You can grab it and read it to your heart's content. And she got paid. Yep. And, you know, he could have done without the propaganda probably.
Based on the insider information, like those of us in the music business were not surprised by these allegations. Like it was a ton of us, men and women, talking to each other that this was not a surprising allegation to us. I think I know he's very much a narcissist. So he did not give her the $30 million initially because he did not believe. He thought he had broken her down enough that she would have crawled into a corner and not pursued this. So that's why I hit you yesterday asking about that attorney. I forgot his name, but he has also handled a couple other high-profile cases. He handled Brian Flores, who was suing the NFL. Like, that attorney doesn't run from high-profile. So it was definitely going to be the battle of two very high-profile attorneys because Diddy had Ben Braffman. This was going to go to trial. That's what she had requested. Like, this was going to get even uglier.
Yeah, and the allegations were, you know, they were
heinous.
Yeah, yeah. And you now, I wonder how many people who are listening now don't agree with it and think to themselves, what took her so long to come forward that she needed to thread the needle in a special law that New York City instituted or will be instituted.
It instituted in May 2022 that you could go back.
That was the state law. The city law is November 23, I believe, to November 23 of 25. There will be a two-year window where there is a infinite look back. Like, it doesn't matter how long ago. There's no statute of limitations that will apply. But the acts have to have happened in New York City. It's a city ordinance. What you're referring to is a one-year look back that was coming to a close very shortly, and that was for New York State. Same unlimited look back. What do you feel, folks, about no statute of limitations? Actions that you engaged in 40 years ago could be the basis for a civil lawsuit. Now, that's the distinction. It's a civil lawsuit. You can lose your property. You can lose your cash. but you cannot lose your liberty. And they allowed this look back to go back for a period of time all the way back to the beginning of time. I don't know. Because witnesses, you know, why do we have statutes of limitation? We have them because witnesses and evidence disappear over time, and it becomes less and less reliable. So we say, okay, we're going to put a limit on how far back you can go. And typically, as you all know, a statute of limitations on a civil case could be 2 years. Mm-hmm. It may be longer for intentional acts. It may be up in some jurisdictions, it could be 5 years or longer. But there is a limit. It's not forever. And so what I don't know what folks think about that, whether that's troubling that this young lady was able to go back decades and decades and decades. And you question why wasn't it sooner that she came forward?
Because, you know, people will just use the term extortion. The difference between, you know, an accusation and extortion, because obviously if any accusation comes in, like, let's go into, do you know the issue with Jonathan Majors?
No.
Okay. So Jonathan Majors is going to court for battery of an ex-girlfriend.
Okay.
Right? His defense is saying that she attacked him. So, you know, now it's, you know, whether it's, you know, he attacked her or she attacked him and he
defended himself.
But anything in that, you know, he's been dropped from movies. He's been dropped from his representation as far as his agent. They're looking to remove him or his storyline from the Kang Marvel. So the accusation itself, you lose so much just from being accused.
Right.
So, you know, that's going in the trial. But I always wonder, you know, like with Kevin Spacey, he lost everything and he was found innocent.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's not, you know, usually something that you can recover.
Right.
I mean, as a defendant in a civil lawsuit, you defend yourself, you win your case. You might get a few dollars for some costs.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Wow.
That's it. And that's why people settle cases. So you see settlements that occur and they're confidential.
Yes.
You lock the person's mouth because you don't want the side damage from what they might be saying in the court of public opinion. And you make a deal. And in this case, Puff Diddy made a deal because he didn't want that in the court of public opinion, right, wrong, or indifferent. And, I'm sure there's truth to that. I mean, when there's smoke, there's usually fire.
Yeah.
And if you're going to pay that kind of money, then, you know, chances are you feel like you've made the right business decision for a lot of reasons. And so that case is it was the big bang yesterday.
That was the big bang
in the news cycle. But yesterday morning, and then by midnight, it was gone.
Yeah, it was quick. A lot of things happen at midnight.
215-227-2727, the number for all things legal. We got an upcoming live show December 9th. If you like tickets, give us a call, 215-227-2727.
All right.
Yep. We've got a case in Massachusetts that was interesting this week. 450 patients at a Massachusetts hospital were potentially exposed to hepatitis and HIV in the past 2 years. And the hospital has notified the potential claimants of their exposure at Salem Hospital. Those patients who were in for an endoscopy, which, by the way, I have every 5 years myself, And so I'm quite familiar with this procedure. They put you out and put a tube down your throat and do a visual inspection of your throat, your stomach, the top of your stomach, et cetera. And so in that process in Massachusetts, they potentially exposed these patients, these 450 patients, to HIV and hepatitis. And so nobody has been diagnosed with either disease. They've, you know, I don't know if they're all in the process of getting tested. And the thing about these diseases is these diseases can fulminate for many years before you can actually see them. And so the question is, there are lawsuits that sue a defendant simply for the cost of the testing over the lifetime of the claimant. And so there's one lawsuit we would expect to see. Now, with only 450 people, that's not a very huge number, but some law firm, I guarantee you, has already begun a complaint for the payment of the testing over the lifetime of these individuals.
And then with the lawsuit, I guess if they win the lawsuit of the lifetime testing, the judge can.
You can't sue for something that hasn't happened.
Right.
So your fear is, am I giving up my rights if I should get the disease?
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the answer is, I don't believe you are, because you don't have it. So you can't sue today for something you don't have. When you realize what you have, now you should, the attorney will carve out an exception in the complaint, in the releasing documents, and say, we're releasing you from testing for all future testing based on this settlement, but we are not releasing you from the damages we suffer from the disease, should we get the disease. That will be carved out.
Gotcha. Now, what about the mental anguish? So, because every time now I have to go get tested, I'm fearing the worst. What about the person, what about that? Does that not come into play as part of the...
Negligent infliction of emotional distress. NIED, negligent infliction of emotional distress, is a cause of action. So the emotional distress by itself could be the basis. However, in many jurisdictions, in order to bring a negligent infliction of emotional distress, you need to have some physical injury. Is the physical injury and not simply a psychological injury? So the question is, you know, does Massachusetts allow a negligent infliction claim without a physical injury? I'm not sure. And I'm not sure you'd want to bring it. Depends on how emotionally distressed, I guess, you are. But I would say from a damages standpoint, I'm looking for the cases where you actually have HIV or hepatitis. And then, of course, you have a substantial claim, because those are, you know, serious life-changing diseases and maybe life-ending diseases. There is the possibility of a negligent infliction claim. 215-227-2727. Have you ever been exposed to some potential disease or problem that was not your making, and what did you do about it? 215-227-2727. Things are going on in Delaware. Did you hear about this?
No. What's going on?
3 stolen cars in one morning in an hour for people who went out to start their car in the morning to warm it up, then went back in the house to grab a coffee or whatever. And while they were back in the house, somebody jumped in their car and off they went.
Yep. Gone are the day. You know, it just seems, you know, society is so much more lawless than before. You know, we used to be able to take that for granted.
Right.
And we just went outside, started our car, go in, have a coffee. When we get in the car, it's nice and warm and toasty and ready to go.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Now you come out and you see four, you know, tire tracks leaving the house.
Yeah, so basically they're saying, look, go out, wear a hoodie, do whatever, but stay in the car.
Yeah.
Stay in the car. Don't leave the car so that, you know, those potential thieves might be thwarted.
You know, a lot of new cars nowadays have the auto start feature. But I don't know if you start it, if the doors remain locked.
Right. And even if the doors are locked, there's still a potential for them to still steal it.
Bust the window, and in the car you go.
Right.
And if it's started, then it's...
Then it can be gone.
It's gone. Yeah. Well, there you go.
Yeah, they're definitely suggesting, look, go out, start, you know, because most new cars really don't need to be warmed up. So it doesn't take that long for a car to warm up.
Yeah,
you just gotta deal with it.
I'm just wondering, like, when I was a kid, cold was cold, like, you know, right, below zero. That was cold.
Right.
We don't have cold like that up here in Delaware anymore. I mean,
you know, we have a couple of days, but even
that's not really cold. I mean, what's happened to people? You know, that's just kind of, that's a little, I mean, 35, 33. How cold did it get down to?
Yeah, it's just, you know, never leave your car running anywhere.
And I've seen cases where people have left the car running while they go in to get a pack of cigarettes at the 7-Eleven. And the car is gone by the time they come out. And I've actually collected from the negligence of the usually, folks, when your car is stolen, you're not responsible for the actions of the person who stole your car, obviously. They have an accident. Your insurance does not pay for that accident because that was not your negligence. It was the negligence of someone who stole your vehicle. So the people they hit are without a remedy unless they have uninsured or underinsured motorists. However, I have successfully sued car insurance carriers because you can't make it easier for somebody to steal your car. If you do leave your keys in the running car and you go into a store, you know or should know that one of the things that could happen is somebody could steal your car and drive like a fool. And so in those cases, the insurance carriers, I have gotten them to pay for the damages caused by the negligence of the stolen car. But typically, if you have kept your car locked and somebody steals your car, you're not responsible if they go and hurt somebody using your vehicle. Hmm. So, you know, but...
And even in carjacking situations.
Of course, same thing in a carjacking situation. But if you contribute and make it easier for somebody to steal your car...
Like going out to warm your car in the morning.
Yes, then you may be responsible for the negligence that falls from the actions of the thief. 215-227-2727, the number for all things legal. All right, let's take some callers. Line one, David, welcome to Court Radio, sir.
Yeah, good morning. How you doing today?
Good, thank you. What's happening in your life, David?
All right, well, a couple years back, I received a settlement from the Philadelphia Housing Authority, right? And the settlement was for a ceiling that caved in on me while I was in the Housing Authority house, and the ceiling fell. But here's the kicker. I did not receive something for this. Raccoons was in the ceiling, which caused the ceiling to fall in because the ceiling had been wet, and the raccoons was in the house, and it fell. And they fell on me in the bitch. And now I'm petrified. Little cats, any furry little animal, possum, raccoon, I'm petrified. Even to the point that one time I peed myself when I came in contact with one. So is that another lawsuit, or I have to chalk that up?
Well, it could have been a part of your lawsuit that you settled. But all of your injuries, those known and unknown, are completely settled when you take a settlement. And what Eric and I were talking about at the top of the show was when you know there may be another injury down the pike, you could have made an exception for that particular injury. Maybe the other side would say, hey, no, we want a full settlement. We're done with you. And if you want your money, you're going to have to sign a full settlement. But regardless, without that language, I guarantee you that the general release you signed for your quote-unquote settlement with the Housing Authority settled for every injury then known and those unknown.
Really?
Yes.
So even unknown, if at the time he didn't know he would be affected for a long term,
yes,
psychologically,
yes,
when he did the settlement.
Settled. Gone. Yes.
Right.
I mean, you're signing a general release. Ordinarily, when you get a settlement, you are signing a general release, and that release releases the party who pays you for all of the damages that they have caused. But not only that, but for any possible claimant, you're releasing the whole world from anything they could have done to you on that day and time in that incident.
Free and clear.
Free and clear. Done. What do you think about that, David?
Well, I think I made a huge mistake in not going to the right attorneys at the time when I did.
Well,
moral of the story.
Yeah, moral. Keep Dean Weitzman's number on your phone. 215-227-2727. You can't go wrong. Thank you, David. Have a great Saturday.
Thank you.
Line two, Eric. Charisma. Good morning, Charisma.
Oh, I can't believe I actually got through. This is so awesome. But anyway, okay, this is what happened. Okay, I was Ubering, and I picked up a lady, and she was just going like a mile away, and it was in Germantown. And she says to me, pull in this apartment complex really quick. I have to get a key. I'm only going to be really, really quick. And I usually pull over for people all the time, and I never have a problem. So I went in there, and it was the back of an apartment complex. And she knocks on somebody's window and then smashes it because the window was like a line where somebody could walk up to it and knock on it. And she smashed it, ran back in the car, and then a guy comes out of the apartment, runs out of the apartment, and smashes my back passenger window. And I got so scared because I didn't even know what to do. I drove up the street because I didn't know if he had a gun or what. So I drove up the street, and I stopped, and I called 911. And when the police got there, I said, well, this passenger, she smashes this guy's window, and then he comes out and smashes my window. So we got to go back to that apartment complex and figure out who that guy is so I can file charges against him for smashing my window. And they said, oh, no, we're not going to do that. We don't care about vandalism. There's too many murders around here, and we don't care. We'll give you the police report number, and you can send away for that, but we can't do anything to help you. And then I called Uber. I reported it to Uber. They said if you want to get the car fixed through us, it's a $2,500 deductible, which I don't make that much at Uber. The rates are real low now, and I don't make anywhere near that. So I went through my regular car insurance, and it's fixed now, but I'm trying to maybe get a civil suit against these people. But Uber won't give me the number of the lady. Or, no, she won't give me the name of the lady. It just said NY on the thing, so they won't give me the name of the lady or anything. And I don't know if I need to sue Uber or try to get a civil suit against her and the guy. I don't even know exactly who they are.
Well, first off, what was the cost to you? You had the repair done. You had to pay something out of your pocket? That's a question. Yes. And if so, how much?
$350, but I wasn't able to Uber for a very long time. I still have, like, a lot of mental problems from it because I'm always afraid somebody's going to ruin my car. And I haven't been able to Uber for, like, months. Like, well, it happened October 9th. So probably, like, a month and a half I haven't been able to drive.
Okay, so you got $350 in damage to your window. What's the loss in earnings from Uber for a month and a half?
Now, on an average.
The insurance paid $5,000.
Okay, so your $350 was your deductible.
Yes.
Okay, but that's what the insurance paid. And so the insurance is entitled, if they wanted to go after somebody, they could go after them. That's their loss, not yours. You have a $350 deductible, and you have some wage loss. And you can't bring a claim on behalf of the insurance company, not unless you got them to agree for you to do that, but that wouldn't make a lot of sense. The money's going directly to them. So the point I'm trying to make here is that you probably have a few thousand dollars in the most extreme example, a few thousand dollars in damage. Is it worth pursuing a claim that you will have to pay somebody to present a claim on your behalf, an attorney, or you can do it on your own in small claims court? If you want to do it on your own, that's always fun. You can just, you know, you have to, but you have to know who you're suing. And without having that information, the names of the parties involved, that's where you're going to fall down. If you can get the names of the parties involved, you can sue them in small claims court for the damages, all of the damages you just mentioned.
Will the city at all, let's say, because she said that she can get the names from Uber. Can
she can file a lawsuit against a John Doe in Pennsylvania now. That's just, you know, there's a change in the rules. Then she could subpoena that information from Uber once she files suit. And then she could get the name of the girl, and then she would depose the girl, and then she could ask the girl who the guy was, what the address was, and then she can join the guy in. Now we're talking about, she's probably spent many hundreds of dollars just to get this information. And you know, that's the reason why you'll never find an attorney who's willing to do that. Because there's simply you're going to spend more than the case is worth. And unfortunately, you're caught up in it, and it costs you $350 and a couple of weeks of missed time of work. And it's that's it.
Not worth it.
Not worth it.
Scratch or anything like that.
Say again?
I can't go after Uber.
Uber? What did Uber do wrong? You can subpoena Uber's records once you file a lawsuit. And Uber would then have to give you the name of the woman.
But, you know, in order to sue anyone, you have to prove negligence. What did Uber do?
I don't know, but I'm just saying, okay, well, what if I was Ubering and somebody beat me up or caused bodily injury? then what could I do?
You could sue the person who did the act, but not Uber. That person didn't act as the agent of Uber under those circumstances. So there's no connection to Uber at all, other than the fact that you happen to be Ubering at the time that some independent party attacks you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, if, you know, sometimes on these safety claims, the company is responsible when they knew or should have known that there was a danger that lurked and they had a duty to protect their client or customer or their employee, whomever, then sometimes you can bring a claim against a culpable company who failed to provide security. But in this case, Uber has no duty. There is no claim. And Charisma, thank God nothing more serious happened. Thanks for listening to Court Radio. Have a great Saturday. Folks, we have to take a quick 2-minute break, and we'll be right back. If you've got legal issues or questions, 215-227-2727. We'll get you on the air in the next half hour. I'm Dean Weitzman. If you have a history of using chemical hair straighteners and have been diagnosed with uterine or endometrial cancer, call My Philly Lawyer now at 215-227-2727. Frequent use of chemical hair relaxers can double the risk of uterine and endometrial cancer. If you've been affected, we will fight for you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
When we say winning matters most, we mean it. My Philly Lawyer just helped secure an $80 million victory for a client suffering from a defective medical product. Whether it's a motor vehicle, workplace, or medical malpractice injury, My Philly Lawyer gets results.
If you've been injured and want aggressive, thoughtful, thorough representation, call My Philly Lawyer first.
Philly's legal champions. 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer. When winning matters most.
I grew up here, went to school here, raised my kids here. I know Philly, and Philly knows me. I started My Philly Lawyer because if you've been injured, your lawyer matters, and choosing someone local matters. It matters to the insurance company, it matters to the jury, and most importantly, your lawyer matters when it comes to getting results. If you've been injured, call us now, 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
I'm Dean Weitzman. If you have a history of using chemical hair straighteners and have been diagnosed with uterine or endometrial cancer, call My Philly Lawyer now at 215-227-2727. Frequent use of chemical hair relaxers can double the risk of uterine and endometrial cancer. If you've been affected, we will fight for you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Good morning and welcome back. I'm Dean Weitzman, and this is Court Radio. Every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m., we tackle the tough legal issues of our callers right here in the studio. And we're having a live studio show for our listeners on December 9th. It's a sort of a party show. We're going to be doing the show live, taking listeners' questions right here from the studio. We're going to be having food, fun, and some merriment.
Merriment.
Yes.
Just make it up.
Holiday time. And so if you'd like to attend the live Court Radio holiday show, all you got to do is give us a call here at the studio, 215-227-2727. We'll get your information and get you lined up to come to see the whole firm in person and right here in Bala Cynwyd at the studio at 555 City Ave. So if you're around on December 9th and you would like to come, just give us a call today, 215-227-2727. All right, let's talk to Shira on line one, Eric. Hi, Shira. Welcome to Court Radio.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you doing? What are you doing today? What's on your agenda for today, Shira?
I'm actually on my way. My church is having a women's conference, so I'm on my way there.
Okay.
Shout out to the women.
Yeah.
Shout out to the ladies.
The ladies are going to get together in conference. What's on the topics for the conference today? What kind of problems are you guys tackling?
Typical women, issues, whether, being a wife, being single, being a mom. Just how to navigate through life, basically, with the support of other women and therapy and everything.
So that's great.
Well-being.
Yeah. Shira's on the right path, and she's got a question for me, so go for it.
Okay. I was in an auto accident about 2 years ago. The driver that hit my vehicle was at fault. She, during the accident, we found out that she did not have a license from the United States. She showed the police a license from Honduras. So at that point, we knew that she was not licensed to drive here. The car, however, was legally registered and insured by her husband. So I was able to, seek remedy as far as like rental car, getting the car fixed, all of that. So the dilemma was I had a two-year-old. My son at the time was 2 years old in the vehicle. And I also had my little dog. So when the accident happened, my dog like flew from one side to the other of the car. And of course, mommy mode, I'm trying to turn around and protect everyone. So I was told that my dog basically doesn't matter. I guess he's considered property, like he's not considered like a living thing to sue. And my question, I guess, would be more referred to my son. So he was two at the time, right? And of course, verbally couldn't say, oh, mommy, this hurts, that hurts. I just took him to get checked out, and they said, oh, he looks good. What if years later he presents any type of problem, right? Any type of, I don't know, medical issue or something, and it could have been related to the accident. How would he be able to seek any remedy
for that? All right. Those are some really great questions. Number one, you're correct. In Pennsylvania, our pets are considered property. They cannot bring pain and suffering claims on behalf of your pet. If the pet required a $300 vet bill because something happened to the pet in that accident, then you can get the $300. That's about the extent of it. If the dog was killed in the accident and it cost you nothing to buy the dog and nothing to replace the dog, like let's say you got it at the pound, then the pet has no value at all.
Question now.
What if
it's a support dog and you needed that dog for emotional support?
Whatever it costs you to replace the dog, so you'd get another support dog, and if it costs you $5,000 to get a support dog, then you're entitled to $5,000, but nothing more. The dog itself, other than the replacement of the dog, has no value in an accident. So that's that. As far as your son goes, okay, Shira asked, my two-year-old was involved in an accident. What if something pops up down the pike? In Pennsylvania, the statute of limitations is delayed for children. And so his statute of limitations will not begin to run. And typically, there is a two-year statute of limitations for civil actions in motor vehicle claims. His statute will not begin to tick away until his 18th birthday. So he has until 18 and then 2 years beyond that. So technically, anything that comes up until he is 20, he can bring a case. Obviously, the longer it takes to uncover an injury you allege happened from the accident, the harder it is to causation that injury to the claim. But if you got beyond that, if it was clear that the injury was and did emanate from that accident, then he absolutely has until his 20th birthday.
Okay. So my question is for me, like if I take this case to court and I settle, right? I guess he still would.
You're settling.
My case wouldn't matter.
Yeah, your case does not impact him. As long as his name is not on the release, and it shouldn't be if he's not getting paid, then your settlement does not impact him.
Right, okay.
He's good to go until his 20th birthday. And, you know, again, with the caveat that the longer it takes to come up with this injury, the harder it will be to connect it to the accident. But it's possible. It's always possible. And, you know, we're talking about in theory. In theory, he has a viable claim until his 20th birthday.
Okay, that's good to know.
Shira, have a great time at the conference. Thanks for listening to Court Radio.
Thank you. Happy
day. Bye now. 215-227-2727, the number for all things legal in Philly. We have, there was a lot of things going on. Puff Diddy's claim is settled, and Sarah says she has it on good information that it was 100 mil.
I didn't even see that.
He could have gotten out. For 30 mil.
Mm-hmm.
Could have gotten out for 30 mil. Let the lady file her complaint. And, you know, we don't have the facts. And what happens in these cases is that we may never get the facts of the settlement because it's a confidential settlement. I can't tell you, Eric, how many releases. When I started practicing law, it was rare indeed. It would be a Puff Diddy kind of situation where you insisted upon confidentiality. Mm. Nowadays, every single release, almost without exception, has a clause in there for confidentiality. And so most folks who have settlements with parties, just average, ordinary Joes, cannot discuss the details of the settlement. And if they do, they can lose the settlement and many, many, many more dollars on top of that. So contractually, most defendants insist upon confidentiality. And in this case, obviously, that's an element of the claim, so that the young lady who made the allegations will never be able to talk about it again publicly in her lifetime. He has sealed her mouth permanently with regard to the incidents involved. It's the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk to Tawana, line two. Hi, Tawana. Tawana. Going twice. All right. Tawana brought up a good question. she used hair relaxer, I mean, to talk about a topic that we've addressed before, but she used hair relaxer over her lifetime. She had fibroids and ultimately had a hysterectomy, and she's calling to see if she has a claim, and the answer is not right now. Right. Unfortunately, I will say this. With regard to hair relaxer, if you have been diagnosed with endometrial or uterine cancer, you have a disease which has been clearly medically and scientifically connected to the use of hair relaxer. With regard to fibroids and hysterectomies, the connection is not as strong. And the firms, myself included, doing this type of litigation have put on hold our cases involving fibroids and hysterectomies. And we are still exploring the medical connection between fibroids, hysterectomy, and hair relaxer. And until that medical connection can be formed with certainty, we are putting on hold those claims. If, however, you have endometrial or uterine cancer or cervical cancer, those cancers are more closely aligned with the use of hair relaxer than anything else, and those cases are good cases. We have many, many clients who unfortunately have suffered with those cancers that we're currently representing against the hair relaxer companies. And so my advice to Tawana is, keep contacting us every few months to see if we've been able to make that connection. Right now, it's not strong enough to pursue those claims. 215-227-2727, the number for all things legal. Let's talk to Sarah on line one. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Welcome to Court Radio. What's happening?
Okay. This is emotional for me.
Take your time.
My mother developed breast cancer. It metastasized to her lungs, progressed quickly to stage four. In the midst of everything that was happening, to release her from the hospital at the time, they recommended sending her to hospice because they really didn't know. What had happened was she started developing fluid around the lungs, which was one of the signs that she was pretty much counting down time. We were told that before they released her, now she had to transition there in order to go home. So from the hospital to hospice, and then she was supposed to come home. They were supposed to show us how to drain the fluid from around her lungs when it built up. That was the only thing that could be done at that point. Right before they released her, the medical team, I forget what department, came through to check how much fluid was being drained and things of that nature. And while they were there, she had a really bad coughing spell. And it worried me, but they said that that was actually a good thing that she was coughing because it was helping to release the fluid from around her lungs. She needed to cough. So that was one of the things I intended to keep an eye on. Now, we get her to hospice. She's fine. She's happy. You would never know anything was wrong. But the nurse wanted to give her a sedative, and she really didn't want one. So I convinced her. I said, okay, let her just give you this one dose. This was about 8 o'clock at night. And then you don't have to take another one. If you wake up, you just don't have to worry about it. So I left my youngest daughter there. She had been with her grandmother the whole time. She'd been in the hospital for a couple of weeks. I get there the next morning, and my mother is still asleep, and it's 10:30 in the morning now. My mother gets up at 4 or 5 o'clock. Clockwork doesn't matter. So I'm like, why is she still asleep? And my daughter says, well, they sedated her. I was like, why are they sedating her? So I request the doctor. He tells me that during the night, the nurse called and said my mother complained about not being able to breathe well. He suggested she sedate her. And apparently this happened more than once. So I'm asking the doctor, said, why is she still sedated? It's 10:30 in the morning. He's like, well, she's in distress. And you're looking at her body and you can see that she's pulling really hard to breathe. And I looked at her, she should be on a CPAP machine, which was next to her bed but was not connected to her. I said, if you put that on her, she'll look better. And they did. And immediately, everything filled back in. She looked normal. She's breathing. So as I'm talking to him, I'm like, why are you sedating her? Well, he says, well, she's in distress. You can tell. I said, how do you know she's in distress? You never, during the conversation, he let me know he never spoke to her directly. They never drained. It wasn't even considered. It was like every time the nurse called, he told her to sedate her. So at least twice after that first dose, she was sedated.
What happened then?
As I'm telling them, they were actually about to give her another dose, and I said, no, let her wake up. So I'm calling my brothers, and I'm talking to them, and my daughter taps me, and I turn around, and that was the other thing. We asked her to drain it. I said to the nurse, well, can you drain it so she can breathe better? And reluctantly, she says yes. And then, again, we were told they would show us how to do it. So as she's setting up, she says, you have to leave. And I'm like, why are we leaving? Well, you can't be in here when I do this. We have to be. You're supposed to show us. Before the nurse gets to set her up, she takes her last breath. I watched her.
Yeah. I reluctantly, we have to go to break, and I want to talk to you, so I want to pick up with you right on the other side of the break, Sarah, okay?
Okay.
I'm Dean Weitzman. If you have a history of using chemical hair straighteners and have been diagnosed with uterine or endometrial cancer, call My Philly Lawyer now at 215-227-2727. Frequent use of chemical hair relaxers can double the risk of uterine and endometrial cancer. If you've been affected, we will fight for you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
When we say winning matters most, we mean it. My Philly Lawyer just helped secure an $80 million victory for a client suffering from a defective medical product. Whether it's a motor vehicle, workplace, or medical malpractice injury, My Philly Lawyer gets results.
If you've been injured and want aggressive, thoughtful, thorough representation, call My Philly Lawyer first.
Philly's legal champions. 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer. When winning matters most.
I grew up here, went to school here, raised my kids here. I know Philly, and Philly knows me. I started My Philly Lawyer because if you've been injured, your lawyer matters, and choosing someone local matters. It matters to the insurance company, it matters to the jury, and most importantly, your lawyer matters when it comes to getting results. If you've been injured, call us now, 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
I'm Dean Weitzman. If you have a history of using chemical hair straighteners and have been diagnosed with uterine or endometrial cancer, call My Philly Lawyer now at 215-227-2727. Frequent use of chemical hair relaxers can double the risk of uterine and endometrial cancer. If you've been affected, We will fight for you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Good morning and welcome back. I'm Dean Weitzman, and this is Court Radio. We had Sarah on the line talking about some care her mom was getting, too much sedation in hospice. I assume, Sarah, that you had your thinking was that this brought about her the end of her life. And it may have, you know, when you're in hospice care, we're dealing in hours, sometimes days, and your time is short. As you said, her cancer was stage four. The doctors and nurses who practice in hospice care can tell when the end of life is coming, and sedation is the choice mode for folks under those circumstances. And I don't believe that the sedation was the cause of her death, but it certainly perhaps eased her into that place. And it's obviously not something that's easy to see in it from a loved one's perspective. But the even if the hospice care was negligent, the question always is in medical malpractice whether that negligence was the cause of the injury, or in this case, death. I don't believe you'll be able to show that the extra medication was the cause of death, because it's interplaying with the advanced stage of her disease at that point. But even if you could, it hastened her death maybe by minutes or hours or days. And that always comes down to a situation where, you know, the damages that you can prove are directly caused by the negligence of the doctors is not enough to warrant bringing a medical malpractice claim, even if in this circumstance you were able to show that, which I doubt very much you could. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us, Sarah. And let me take a last quick call on line two from Dolly. Oh, Dolly?
Yes.
You've got like 2 minutes, so give me the very short version of your question.
Okay, it's probate. I was with my partner for 23 years. He passed away in January, and his son's just coming down and trying to put me out of our house. Because they say that it was entitled to them because he didn't have a will.
All right.
But I feel like we were common law, and that I invested in the house, and at least I should get that because they just want the house to sell it.
I hear you. All right. So here's the quick answer. Common law in Pennsylvania was abrogated or gotten rid of to January of 2005. And now, if you were a common law spouse before January of 2005, then you do have rights. As a spouse, you have a 1/3 interest in his estate, even if there is no will. Well, as a spouse, you might be entitled to half of his estate if his children came from a different mother. So there is definitely an interest if and only if the court determines you were his common law spouse, which theoretically is possible since it was before 2005. But to have a common law marriage, one must have a ceremony of sorts. You say, I take you to be my husband. He says, I take you to be my wife. And you hold yourself out to the rest of the world as husband and wife from that day forward. If you have witnesses who can attest to your common law marriage, then you may have a claim here. And you should, you know, consider retaining an attorney to explore that. But again, in these types of cases, they're not done on a contingent fee basis. You need money to hire an attorney. And you're free to give us a call or anybody else to discuss that claim, Dolly. I don't have any more time to talk to you about it, but you may have a claim. That's all I can say at this point, because common law marriage did not end until 2005, and those before it were grandfathered in. Thanks for listening to Court Radio today, folks. Don't forget, we have the Court Radio live show on December 9th. And if you'd like to go, send me an email to dean@myphillylawyer.com. See you next week, same time, same place.